story, new paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at the radio show's page at richarddugan.com, and we encourage you to go there and check out what we have to offer as far as not only ourselves, but also our guests, what they have to offer in the light of what's going on in the world these days, which may or may not be something that that we get sort of wound up into. And we're basically just trying to make sense of it all. And we're going to have some help doing just that here on the program. And we also will link to our guests' website as well. So please take note of that as it comes by. We'll be doing that in just a moment. There are times when I sometimes wonder, how in the world did I come across this particular guest? And I honestly seem to think that I was going through, as I do quite frequently, I've got probably almost 1,000 emails in my inbox, in the main part of my email account, if you will. And sometimes I'll go through and I'll put them in alphabetical order from who sent. And they put them in all different orders as far as chronology is concerned. And I just start scrolling through and I get 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 of them from the same place. And okay, those can go because those are 5 years old. I kid you not, I have stuff that's that old. Because I don't like deleting some of these things because some of the information is there. But I just haven't had the time to connect with these folks. Well, today we're going to rectify that in that regard. We're going to be talking not only about the Center for Human Awakening, but we're also going to be talking about the work that they do, as well as much of what you can get involved in that regard. And we encourage you to do so, to go to their website and find out what the Center for Human Awakening is. And we're going to get more information in that regard from our special guest today. And I guess that what I should have done at the front end of this program is clarified my guest's, the pronunciation of my guest's last name. Roger, is it Mayer?
You can pronounce it Mayer, Richard. I often pronounce it Meager.
All right. Well, I'm a stickler for getting the pronunciations right because I want to respect you and your family and the name that that you were given. So give me the pronunciation that you you have been living with the majority of your life.
Robert's the first name and Meager is the last name.
All right. Robert Meager. And you are presently, you're the director of the center?
Co-founder. Co-founder. Okay. Human Awakening, along with certainly the spiritual founder and figurehead, Richard Harvey.
All right. You and Richard came together how long ago to create this center? Or maybe we should go back a little bit further and ask the question, why did you two come together in the first place?
Well, the why, you'd be, I think, as well-versed to answer that question as I would, certainly divine-led. Richard and Harvey and I met what seemed like a serendipitous, in retrospect, connection on LinkedIn. And the journey began back in 2010 via that LinkedIn connection and some conference calls and then the invitation and the acceptance on both our parts, began a series of projects that led to an initial online offering called Sacred Attention Therapy, which is the foundation of the psycho-spiritual teachings that Richard has developed over several decades of his life. And that Sacred Attention Therapy, which was offered through a website, grew into a much broader vision and offering, which became the Center for Human Awakening, which officially launched on January 1st of this year, 2017.
Now, you are located in Canada, but this is obviously due to the internet and all of the wonderful technologies we have available. I mean, you and I, we're conversing here using Skype. There are all kinds of other programs that allow us to do that. And to me, I would much rather certainly have a guest in studio. I love the energy that's generated in the context of a face-to-face interview. Skype would be my next or comparable software, if you will, would be my next best option, because you sound almost like you're right here in studio, which is great, and there's little or no distraction of any kind as far as the audio quality, which I really enjoy. Phone lines, hey, good. I've used them for decades conducting interviews, and certainly we can do that. But this is something that, as you say, you just launched the center officially, as you're saying, January 1st of 2017.
Correct.
But this is a work that's been underway for many years.
Well, a work that, not to speak on behalf of Richard Harvey, but to share with you a little of his journey and my journey in collaborating with Richard, this is something that's been ongoing for more than 40 years in terms of it being given birth to. To come back to your comment about my being located in Ottawa, Canada, you're correct. You're reaching me today from Ottawa, Canada. And in that collaborative relationship with Richard, you could look at me as a sort of representative for the Center for Human Awakening here in North, South, and Central America. The physical center itself, if one wanted to visit the physical center, that would be in southern Spain. In the Andalusia area, which is the personal retreat and spiritual center for Richard Harvey. So there is a physical center, and that's located in southern Spain. I, again, on this beautifully collaborative journey with Richard Harvey since 2011, there is a representation, at least in spokesperson, if nothing else, for here in North Central and South America. But our aim is very much a global outreach in terms of offering and raising individual and ultimately collective consciousness through the various initiatives we offer at the center.
Well, let's first of all, we'll start from the beginning. Let's talk about your mission. What is the mission of the Center for Human Awakening?
Very briefly, and I'm almost reading right from the mission statement on the website, it's very simply to awaken individual consciousness and in the process, trusting that we're furthering global healing and the collective awakening of humanity through course offerings, educational offerings, through community growth and development. There's some research that we do as well. There's lots of offerings, what one might frequently see as free stuff, other offerings that are available through the center, as well as there is material that one can purchase and other things that one can get involved in as well.
Well, there would be those, pardon me, who would say that there is no question that this globe needs a great deal of healing. And not just on a physical / environmental level, but on a spiritual level, a consciousness level. And we're all struggling with that. We're all, I mean, I didn't do too well coming to work today on a spiritual level because I got a little annoyed with people who were, you know, and I've really been working on that. I mean, I know they're not out to get me personally. I finally came to grips with that they didn't get up this morning saying, let's get him. and I know a lot of people do. They take it personally. But I just marvel at, you know, people's, and I'm going to put it this way, they're unaware of not only what they're doing, but where they're doing it. Specifically, obviously, in this case, driving a vehicle. Yeah, and it just astounds me. It's like, do you understand that there are other people around you? This happens even when I'm walking. We have a main street here in Santa Barbara. It's called State Street. And I love walking down to the beach. I can do it in 20 minutes to get to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people aren't even on cell phones. They're not looking at their screens. They're just like out there somewhere. And I don't know where that is because it sure isn't here. They're just oblivious they stop right in the middle of the sidewalk, not realizing that there are people who are moving in their direction, you know, and they've really stopped. You know, these kinds of things just kind of, I look at that and I go, wow, how is this person what is this person so distracted by internally that mm-hmm. that they're not operating their physical body vehicle in a way that's going to keep them and others safe and free from injury and so forth? Mm-hmm. And I know that that's part of it. But in terms of this aspect of healing and raising the consciousness, if you will,
mm-hmm.
what are some of the steps that you and Richard have come up with to help people to do that?
The foundation is offered in a variety of services initiatives at the center, but it's all based on Richard's three-stage model of human awakening, which is all-encompassing in terms of the teaching. So it brings us through the first stage is the journey of self-discovery, which is perhaps the more psychological aspect of this twinning, this synergy of psychology and the science of psychology and spirituality. So the first stage of this three-stage model of human awakening is that of the journey of self-discovery. And this is becoming aware. You spoke in that beautiful example you shared about walking along the sidewalk and people seem to be in another world. It's just a growing awareness of this story that's grown out of our early childhood experiences that's become solidified as we've matured, one might say, through adolescence and into adulthood. And as we get to the end of stage one, we begin the welcome process of shedding ourselves of this constriction, a story. Going into stage two, I mean, we cross a chasm of sorts where we allow ourselves to shed ourselves of this story. And we enter a stage or a period of coming into our authenticity, who we truly are, a returning of sorts, if you want to call it that. And as we get to the end of stage two, it's really the preparatory stage for a true and authentic spiritual life and spiritual practice, which is what stage three is really all about. And that is coming back to a union with the divine source, God, call it whatever you wish. But most everything that underpins the teachings, the sharings, the offerings, the community development through the center, it's based on this three-stage model of human awakening. Stage one, journey of self-discovery. Stage two, transformation into authenticity. And then stage three, union with the divine.
Mm. Now, you also have in this framework, you have three spheres of endeavor: the way of sacred attention, the creation of divine metapsychology, and the art of conscious living. I guess mm-hmm. the best thing to do is let's start with number one, the way of sacred attention. And again, yes. Maybe this continues to dovetail off of my example of people being, in essence, I'm going to say oblivious to not only what's going on around them physically.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things I would love to be oblivious of. There's a wonderful line in a song that has something to do with the words to the effect that, you know, I have seen things that I can never forget, I think is the line in this particular song. Mm. And there are some things that I wish I could. Mm. Not because they were so horrific. And I'm not talking about, you know, people's body parts and this kind of thing or other, those types. Mm-hmm. But there are certain events that, you know, if I could just erase that from my memory. But that won't happen. But I know that it goes beyond that to when you speak of sacred attention, we're talking on a higher level, a more spiritual, or as I like to even put it, a more metaphysical level.
Mm-hmm. Well, the sacred attention therapy, which is one of the two founding concepts, principles, initiatives within the way of sacred attention, invites one to listen to the soul of the other with the whole self. And that sacred attention therapy is both an invitation for the therapist as a practitioner as well as for the therapee or the aspirant who wishes, through a coming into their own awareness, through a raising of their consciousness, to be aware of and take responsibility for their thoughts, what they're thinking, what they're seeing, how they're behaving. But through an awareness of it allows them to be able to ultimately shed that story, which, as I mentioned earlier, has kept them in a constricted state or has removed them from the possibilities that revolve around forgiveness and moving into a heart space, away from a fear-based existence into a love-based existence. And this sacred attention spiritual training, which is the second component of the way of sacred attention, is, again, moving towards the end of the second stage and into the third stage of the three-stage model of human awakening that's based on Richard Harvey's work, that moves us into a sacred spiritual life. Again, away from a fear state into a state of heartfelt compassion and love.
I find it rather ironic and coincidental. That's how I pronounce that now, because I don't believe in coincidences. There are coincidences.
Yes.
That you had a fire truck going by, and that certainly instills a great deal of fear in individuals, whether they're involved in whatever the incident is, that where this vehicle is headed or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about that in terms of a lot of things that are certainly going on around the planet these days and the concerns that people have about others who want to, who want them to live a particular way. I mean, I grew up in this industry surrounded by individuals who basically, whether they were wanting to admit it or not, wanted me to live a particular way. Mm-hmm, I worked for a Christian radio station for 15 years.
Mm-hmm,
And when I left that station, the general manager said that I was a casualty of Christian radio because I wasn't towing the party line, as it were. And there are people in all different realms of our society who feel that it's their job to tell me and you how we're supposed to live. And I am guessing that between you and Richard and what you've created here, that's not what you're talking about here.
There is an invitation, I think, with any spiritual practice, any faith tradition, the invitation to grow into our authenticity. There's a constant barrage of outside influences that perhaps well-intentioned, maybe not, that invite us to conform to a way of living in this world. And there's nothing inherently right or wrong with that, nothing inherently good or bad. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for many, it unconsciously contributes to this movement away from the core, the movement away from the divine self, the movement away from who we truly are.
Mm.
You know, there's something else I think critically important, and I'm speaking now more from my personal viewpoints and not necessarily on behalf of the center, but mm-hmm. I find these outside influences, and there are many, and they come in the form of monolithic and gigantic systems. I mean, there's financial systems, there's education systems, there's economic systems, mm-hmm. there's geopolitical systems, there's environmental systems. And there's many thoughts that come along with that. And, you know, one of the personal foundations upon which I live is What someone thinks about me is none of my business. What someone says about me, even in my face, is none of my business. What someone does without me is none of my business. All that is my business is how I see something, how I react or respond to it, and how I choose to live my life accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
That process, I think, can only start to unfold when we allow ourselves some space between what we see happening or what we think we see happening outside of us and our response to that. I think all too often there's very little time in a time sense between when something happens and our response or reaction to it. And I know through my own personal experience that one of the gifts of any spiritual practice is to create that space between an event taking place and our response or our reaction to it. And the greater the space we can create, the greater opportunity we have to how we choose to respond. And that gives us an opportunity to say, okay, am I going to respond from my heart or am I going to respond from my head? Head being metaphorical for an egoic-based response.
Right, right.
If I might use that perhaps overused word, I like to think of the ego simply as something that has me do things that I otherwise really wouldn't want to be doing.
Hmm. We're talking with, and if I'm correct here, Reverend Robert Meagher.
I have been ordained as an interfaith minister, yes.
All right. And you're a psycho-spiritual psychotherapist, an SAT therapist, certified level one, founder and spiritual director, spiritual guidance as well in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, if I'm correct on those on that abbreviation there.
All correct. Oh. All correct.
Boy, I feel so much better. And we are talking here about what I think it to me it's very intriguing. Anybody who is working to assist the rest of humanity to raise their consciousness, to awaken humanity, is okay in my book because the fact of the matter is that as you've just been alluding to, well, we both have, there are so many people who do not want us to wake up. They do not want us to self-determine our lives. They want us to be part of all of those systems and then some that you spoke to there just a few moments ago. Mm-hmm. And to that end, I mean, I was born and raised Roman Catholic. And mm-hmm. I suppose that if today I was still a Roman Catholic practicing, I still apparently technically am a Roman Catholic, because at one point in my spiritual growth, I took a letter to the rectory and I asked them to remove my name from the rolls because I was no longer going to be a practicing Catholic, to which they said, to my consternation, we'll put it in your file. And I thought, you and the FBI? Okay. But one of the rules, if you will, for living the Catholic life was to be, quote unquote, fruitful and multiply.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, wait a minute. Fruitful and multiply, that's all fine, well, and good, but I don't want to bring any kids into this world and share this these various congenital defects, as I call them, or abnormalities or what have you, that I had to deal with. I don't want to bring any kids into this world who have those kinds of conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm justified in taking that position, just as any parent would be. I mean, isn't that one of the reasons why so many, a lot of these new, what do you want to call them? People will go in and they'll have their genes checked to see if they carry a particular chromosome, I guess it is, for a particular malady or condition or disorder and so forth. And then they can decide as to whether or not they want to still have children. And some people do. and that's certainly their choice. But after what I went through, and I know technology has advanced to incredible levels. I mean, I had to wait 38 years for a lens implant in order to be able to drive. You know, and so, all right, so you have all of those elements. But, you know, that was my decision back in my 30s before. Actually, it was before my lens implant. So those are the kinds of rules for living that different social structures or entities want to give. And I've always struggled with that, Robert, from the standpoint when you talk about economic systems. And I'm constantly asking the question, why are we still doing it this way when there's so much inequity amongst the population? Who says this is the only way? It's just the only one we are willing to try. Well, because, of course, it benefits the people at the top, you know? So, you know, I ask that of all of these institutions. Who says that's the only way to educate? Who says that's the only way to take care of the environment? Who says that's the only way to do this, that, or the other thing? And when it seems to me, and I would like you to elaborate on this, Robert, that if we can come up with other ways of doing things that are, to use the catchphrase, that are sustainable, but also serve all the people, and I think that is possible, isn't that part of waking up and raising the consciousness of humanity?
The point you bring up, I think, is really important, this idea about change. But from a sacred spiritual point of view, whatever we see outside, and not to sound trite, but is merely a reflection of what's going on inside. From a psychological point of view, I mean, change happens, whether it be, you know, a change in my diet or a change in the way I behave or change in these enormous systems that seem to be going on outside of us. Change happens when the fear of change is less than the fear of staying the same. It's all based around fear. But I personally tend to align myself with, you know, the teachings of some luminaries who suggest that this supposed chaos, this supposed upheaval that presents itself in many different forms around the world, whether it be geopolitical unrest, whether it be upheaval in the economic markets, whether it be environmental chaos, quiet ourselves, come at peace with yourself. What's outside of you will take care of itself, because there actually is nothing outside of you. It's all merely a reflection of what's going on inside. So the degree to which we perceive or see chaos is really a reflection of what's going on inside. And this is the gift, this is the invitation of, I think, of any spiritual practice, any spiritual way, any spiritual life, is to come back more in tune, alignment, come back in touch with that peaceful, tranquil place that's at the core of our being. The rest of life will seemingly mysteriously take care of itself. There is nothing going on outside of us. It is all an illusion. And yet some who may be hearing this, Richard, and you may yourself be hearing it and saying, Rob, I mean, how can you say that? There's unrest on of magnitudes that are going on that you can't deny it. I mean, recent events in the UK and Manchester, a beautiful, beautiful example. These are opportunities to reflect on what's going on inside. They're opportunities to reflect on what is it we're seeing. I mean, there have been many people who, on the tail end of events like that recently happened in Manchester, who in despair say to me, Rob, when will this end? When will this unrest end? When will these travesties end? I said, it's simple. They'll end when we stop seeing them as travesties. They'll end when we stop seeing them as disasters. They'll end when we stop seeing them as unrest, chaos, and devastation. That's when they'll end. As long as we continue to see them as we're seeing them, we're going to be in a state of dis-ease. Born from this conflicted state that manifests inside us and then is projected on the world outside of us.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I am absolutely not at odds with what you've stated, and I would reiterate, if you will, from my perspective, that is part of the dilemma of waking up that we face, because we become so distracted, enamored, if you will, by the outward events. Mm-hmm. That it's almost as if, and yes, I agree with you, it's a mirror of what's going on inside. It's almost to the effect, not that I personally created that happened, say, in Manchester or in Paris or whatever other part of the world where there is some of this chaos and turmoil on any of those levels. But more, why did I create this distraction?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I bring it back to the I'm going to say proper or correct focus, which needs to be on my inner life. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know about you. I probably still watch way too much television in spite of the fact that the majority of what I watch now is what's called on demand. With the various services that are available, I no longer have the stuff just piped in via satellite or cable. I get to pick and choose what I watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very frustrating sometimes because of the bandwidth. And sometimes it's slow and buffering, and other times it's not. But what I find is that, on the one hand, I see things that I've never seen before. There are documentaries, there are movies that I never even heard of, and I'm going, wow, what a great idea that was. Who came up with that? And that's really cool. And I wonder if there's more of that. Mm-hmm. Or a documentary about a particular place in the world or a particular invention or a group of people that are striving in their communities to make a better life for themselves, or for that matter, maybe even not even working to make a better life. When I think of that, I think of a lot of the tribes, say, in Central and South America who are out in the jungles, right? And they've been living their lives the way they've been living for hundreds of years just fine. Thank you very much. They don't need cell phones and iPads and cable and satellite dishes and all of that. They're doing just fine. You know, they're quite content and happy with their lives the way they are. Then we find them, and we've got to, for whatever reason, whatever ego-centered reason, we've got to convert them to the modern age, when in fact I kind of wish they would convert us to the primitive age, because I would bet you if we spoke the language, we'd find, I'm just guessing here because I don't know, we'd find a very deep, probably very deep spiritual life.
Mm.
And again, I'm only speculating on that because they don't have all of the other distractions. They're just living day to day and enjoying the space in which they live. If you have just joined us, we're talking to Reverend Robert Meager, and he is with the Center for Human Awakening. I'm Richard Ugin. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We want you to stay right where you are. We're coming right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for staying with us. We're talking with Reverend Robert Meager. He is with the Center for Human Awakening, and we're very grateful for the time that you have given us here on the program. It's to me, the conversation that we are having, people need to be having all over the place, because it's just, it's something that we need to find a way to sort of ring that bell for people. And it's almost like, okay, I'm setting the alarm clock for midnight, January 1st, 2018, and everyone's going to wake up. And then we're all going to work towards a better life for all. And I kind of put it this way, Robert, in that my experience shows me that I've come up with this one analogy. I don't know, and you can comment on it when I'm finished here, and that is that there is a lifeboat. We have a lifeboat. And this lifeboat will accommodate everyone, all 750 billion or whatever the 7 billion people, 8 billion, whatever the number is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one catch, if you will, one proviso. You have to be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things because they don't work. Just look around you and consider new possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe I'm crazy. It's not the first time that I would be considered crazy. But the reality is that we all know what the definition of insanity is. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. Or, and I remember when I came up with this particular analogy, throwing a videotape of a movie into the machine and watching it and expecting a different ending at the end of the tape.
Mm-hmm.
Or, in this case, nowadays, of course, a disc, a DVD, or on-demand, what have you. It's not going to happen. So why are we continuing? Because I have to tell you, from a physical standpoint, humanity hasn't progressed one iota in, I'm even going to go as far as to say, in 200, if not 2,000 years. We're still doing the same stupid things that we've been doing, fighting amongst ourselves over things that, you know, we need to begin the process of sitting down, talking with one another, finding out where someone's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a program last night, as a matter of fact, where this one guy was hell-bent on revenge against another group of people because of what he perceived they had done to him and his people in his country.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, these people captured him and brought him on board their boat, and they began to take care of him and minister to his wounds and so forth and talk to him. And he began to understand that they, whom he had been fighting against, they weren't the ones that had done it. And they, in turn, began to understand why he was hell-bent on revenge. The dust settles. He now is helping them. Assisting them. To me, that's what we need to begin the process of doing on an outward level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think, okay, so what parts of ourselves internally do we need to start to listen to and understand in order to bring about, say, the outward manifestation, that mirror, outward mirroring of what's going on the inside? What's at odds on the inside?
The beautiful story you shared about the gentleman in the community, it sounds like there was some forgiveness that took place there. This offering of letting go, forgiveness is part of the process. And I offer that both in a traditional faith perspective as well as from a spiritual perspective. The idea of forgiveness spans many spiritual and faith traditions. This idea of resistance, though, resistance to life, underneath it is our desire to control, our desire to want to control life, to be the one who decides what happens. And there's that wonderful expression, we plan and God laughs. The ability to allow life to happen, to not resist. It's one of the greatest lessons I continue to learn in my life, but it's not an easy one for many people. It's a challenge to let go, to trust that all is in divine order, that everything that's happening to us or we perceive is happening to us is for our own good. Mm. When one begins to learn that life, in fact, in its broadest sense, is not happening to us, but it's happening for us, it allows us to begin to shift how we see all of these things outside of us. The key thing is how we see it. And until we begin to see it as something that's happening for us, for our own personal growth and development, both from a psychological and a spiritual point of view, when we can begin to see it's happening for us, we can begin to shift and allow ourselves to let go much more easily.
I'm curious as to what happened to you that made you so concerned about, and maybe this is the wrong word, but I'll use it just the same, the fate of humanity, that you chose to link up with Richard to create this center, to begin this work, to facilitate, shall we say, facilitate humanity's waking up.
You're very intuitive, Richard. You're very intuitive. The conscious journey, I say conscious because I became aware of how life was unfolding for me and then started to make conscious decisions as a result. It was back in 2006 when it was the closest thing I ever came in my life to hearing a voice. And it was just an internal guidance that shared with me, that invited me to start simplifying my life materially, financially, relationally. And it was over a process of a couple of years where I realized that what I was doing up to my life at that point is not what I wanted to continue doing. And I wanted to turn more to offering back to humanity through service, something of redeeming value. And so in 2009, I did what for some people would be a very ridiculous or reckless thing. For others, it would be a courageous thing, and just said goodbye to corporate Canada or corporate America, as you may be able to relate to it better there, and try and find a different way of living in the world. And that was initially expressed through my personal ministry, spiritual guidance that you've alluded to already. And then there was that fateful, what was that beautiful word, Richard, you used? Not coincidental, but
coincidence.
Coincidence of the meeting with Richard. And there was just a beautiful synergy and connection with the work he was doing through his three-stage model of human awakening and sacred attention therapy, and where I was wanting to go in my life. And the beautiful alignment was also born out of my lifetime of study of psychology. And then as spirituality started to come into it, I always looked for something that brought the two of them together. And there were some of the grandfathers of psychology, and I'm speaking of Jung and others, who attempted to do it. But of course, the culture, the society, certainly the institutions at the time, weren't particularly welcoming of such marrying of science and spirituality at the time. And I found a home and a heart space in Richard Harvey's work that allowed me to bring together this intrigue, this fascination, this lifelong study in psychology with the numinous, with the transcendental. And so there was an immediate soul connection with Richard and his work. And as I alluded to when we began talking, of this this initial collaborative effort with my reviewing some manuscripts for some books he was writing at the time, and then this the decision to bring our efforts more and more together, that ultimately over a series of 4 or 5 years spanned and manifested in the launching of the center, which for me is just a beautiful extension of the personal work I've done, the personal study I've done over decades, and the invitation to continue working in a healing capacity for the benefit of humanity. Mm.
In light of what you have just shared with us as far as your connection with Richard Harvey, mm-hmm. Who is Richard Harvey to you? Who does he represent? Or, I mean, is he your guru? I know you're co-founders. I get that.
Sure.
But obviously, the work that he has been doing, and obviously has been doing for quite a number of years.
More than 40, yeah.
Yeah. You know, is extraordinary to say the very least, and we're going to jump into some other areas here as well in terms of the other two spheres of endeavor. But I'm curious as to who he is to you.
Who he is to me. From a spiritual perspective, Richard is me. He is merely a reflection, a mirroring back. But from perhaps more of an earthly perspective, Richard, shortly after we met, Richard served as my therapist, my spiritual teacher, in my working through my own first stage of awakening in the three-stage model. For other people, they may be able to relate to it as Richard was my psychotherapist through my depth psychotherapy training. He remains my spiritual teacher, but over the years, there's been an indelible trust and respect that has been forged, that has grown between Richard and I, and it's very much a collegial, again, very much based in respect. I think something that's very important for me, and I want to take the opportunity to share, is, you know, some people have asked, oh, well, what's Richard do and what do you do, Rob, you know, as part of the center? And the way I like to respond to it is that without the other, this wouldn't happen. Yeah, Richard does his thing and I do my thing, and together we're kind of like instruments in an orchestra. Together we make beautiful music. Mm-hmm. I think that is very representative of both the therapeutic process and the world in a broader sense. In a therapeutic process, you need both the therapist and the therapy. You need both the teacher and the student. And together, healing can result. And in a broader world, we need each other. Mm-hmm. All of us. We can't exist without the other. And if there's anything that this again seemingly coincidental meeting with Richard back in 2010 has taught me, is we need each other. This center would not exist if it wasn't for the collective efforts of Richard and I. Richard couldn't do it on his own, and I couldn't do it on my own. We absolutely need the other. And that is the basis, that's the foundation for the sacred attention therapy, both as a practice, as a therapist, counselor, call them whatever you want, teacher, and the person undergoing the therapy. You need the teacher and the student. Mm-hmm. And for humanity at this time, I don't think that message could be more important. We need each other.
Absolutely. I have to say that the moment you used that phrase, the first thing that came to my mind was the positive and negative ends of a battery. You can't have one without the other.
Right.
And it keeps whatever it is that you've got that battery in running. And in this case, we hope that it'll keep humanity running. Although I have to say, I've been challenged quite a bit over the last decade or more to justify humanity's continuation because of the fact that it seems, on the outside, it seems that we haven't learned a thing. We haven't progressed one iota. And I say that from the standpoint that we are still fighting amongst ourselves. We all come from the same place. And, you know, again, maybe that's part of the process. Maybe that's one of the lessons that we're supposed to learn, you know, this being the schoolhouse and what have you. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out myself as we move forward. But it just seems like, kids are in school, right? And when they start to act up and they start to behave in such a way that's disruptive to the rest of the class, eventually the instructor and the administration say, you know what, you're out. Goodbye. Because you're not interested in learning. We've tried everything. And you're disrupting the learning process for everyone else. I kind of feel that way about humanity. You know, you're disruptive of the rest of the universe. Goodbye. I'm not talking about annihilation here. I'm not talking about self-destruction. I'm just saying, okay, December 31st of 2017, no more babies. No more. That generation is the last one, and we're just gonna go. There are those who would say, you won't even have to wait that long because we've destroyed the environment so badly that, we're already in what's called, I guess, a mass extinction phase, if you will. Maybe there's, for all I know, there could be a meteor or a comet heading our way with our name on it. It seems really interesting that this planet still exists when all of this stuff is flying through the universe, and we see in our telescopes down through the centuries, we've seen different planets and different astronomical bodies disappear because there was a collision and they were obliterated. And yet here we are. We're still here. And do we have a protective shield around us? I don't know. But we are here, and that's really the bottom line, is that we are here. And I've used the analogy, Robert, that if God, the universal power, had intended for each one of us, all 7.5 billion, to live on individual planets separate from one another, I'm sure that there are more than enough Class M planets for each one of us to live on. However, that's not the situation. We're all here. And so that tells me that we're here because we're here to work together. Very interesting conversation we're having here. We're talking also, in addition to the Center for Human Awakening, we're also talking about the three spheres of endeavor and the creation of divine meta-psychology. Now, I have a general idea of what psychology is. Please define for me metapsychology and then a divine metapsychology. Step us up, if you will. Take us up the ladder.
Well, psychology, the study of human behavior, metapsychology, the study of human behavior that can't be empirically qualified or quantified. Which for many moves it into a space that's very uncomfortable, because if you can't measure it in a petri dish, does it even exist? And then divine metapsychology, one where the numinous or the unexplainable is welcomed into the mix. This divine metapsychology is predominantly explored, and this creation of the divine metapsychology is predominantly explored through the center. It's something we call the Sacred Attention Therapy Project. It is an opportunity for a global community, and there's practitioners around the world that are currently participating in the writing and publishing of a series of works, manuscripts, again, all based around the three-stage model of human awakening. So those that are more oriented towards the psychology or this psychological component of this divine metapsychology, will enjoy working on the manuscripts in the first phase of this sacred attention therapy project. As we get into the second and the third phases, we're moving more towards the metta and more towards the divine. But this creation of a divine metapsychology is primarily through this research project called the Sacred Attention Therapy Project, where there's a group of professionals, teachers, healers from around the world, all offering their contribution in written form to a series of publications that are intended to be published over the coming years.
So in this process of creating this divine metapsychology, again, you folks offer coursework, which is, you know, a wonderful thing. We can kind of go to school, if you will, online. And in terms of taking some of this coursework, and we'll focus certainly on the creative aspects of divine metapsychology, but what does one come out of at the other end of the educational process through some of these courses? Are these accredited, or is this more education that I just really feel I need some more input here to better understand myself, my inner life, and so forth?
Both would be the short answer to your question. Underpinning all of the course offerings is an experiential experience. So whether one wanted to take, for example, the Realizing the Divine or the Sacred Attention Vision short courses as we're talking, it is a journey through self-discovery. So it's very much an experiential process. The Sacred Attention Therapy Online Training, which is, you could say, the flagship training at this point, again, very experiential. Grounded in a psychological component, but bringing the spiritual, the numinous into it. There is a certification track if one wished through the Center for Human Awakening to pursue certification. You'd then have our blessing based on the certification process to practice as a sacred attention therapy therapist. There are four levels to that flagship training. Level one, currently offered. Level two is in production. Level three and four will come in the years to follow. But coming back to your question, almost all of the course offerings are very experiential in nature. The flagship, the Sacred Attention Therapy Online Training, has that certification element. If that's important for an individual, we talk in the description of the Sacred Attention Therapy Online Training on the website that there's three audiences that may enjoy or may be particularly interested in the Sacred Attention Therapy Online Training. And that is for the person, first and foremost, the serious student of personal growth and development or inner work. The individual, the second is the individual who may want to practice as a counselor or a therapist, bringing together the spiritual and the psychological. And then what our experience has been, the third category is those individuals who are currently practicing, either as a psychiatrist, psychologist, psychoanalyst, counselor, therapist, healer, Reiki practitioner, energy healer, who wants to add some new tools to their toolkit, if you want to call it that. That's the third audience of the three that the Sacred Attention Therapy Online Training is focused on.
Let's talk about the art of conscious living. That obviously is right in our wheelhouse because we're looking for those new ways of living, as I described before. The program is focused on new paradigms for a new world and helping people to fulfill their dreams. Talk to us about that whole aspect. And I like the fact that it's the art and not the business, not the science, but the art.
Yeah, it's the opportunity to bring to life in a community setting the underpinning teachings as offered through this three-stage model of human awakening. And how that's done is, I'm going to use the term of neo-monastic communities, offering individuals the opportunity to come together and in spiritual community, learn and grow together, perhaps through the oversight of a spiritual teacher, perhaps not. There are some invitations, some, I won't call them guidelines, but things to consider with the formation of these communities. We have a community forming in southern Spain. It'll be nice that it's located there because Richard Harvey may be able to serve as the spiritual guide and spiritual teacher for the community. But it's the opportunity for individuals to come together in community. And there's a number of examples around the world where other organizations are doing the same thing, just to help each other grow spiritually through a process of inner work, inner growth, and inner development in a supportive environment. And very much a learning environment.
Mm. Well, the two of you have created a very interesting and I think very intriguing for most people center, the Center for Human Awakening, the Psycho-Spiritual Teachings of Richard Harvey, been in development for more than 40 years, which is about as long as I've been in this industry doing interviews. And I always find it fascinating as we talk with people about the type of work that they're doing. And in this case, the mission of the Center for a Human Awakening is to awaken individual consciousness, further global healing, and the collective awakening of humanity in order to establish the spiritual sacred foundation for a new era of awareness, compassion, mm-hmm. and peace. Awareness, compassion, and mm-hmm. peace. It doesn't make a great acronym. That's okay, because I like those elements: awareness, compassion, and peace. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, we could use a lot of that. From your perspective, before we wrap up the program, mm-hmm. and granted, this center's only been open officially since January 1, 2017, mm-hmm. but the work has been going on, obviously, again, for 40-plus years. Have you seen on the outward landscape mm-hmm. evidence that shows you that people are waking up?
Hmm. From an observation of the interest in what the center is offering, yes. From a personal space of being able to remain in a state of peace, mm-hmm. being able to stay in a state of compassion, being able to stay in a state of love, seemingly in spite of and because of all that's happening in the world, shows me that there is an awareness raising. There is a consciousness raising. There is a waking up. And we hope that through the center that our continued efforts, our persistence, and our patience will serve as a beacon, will serve as a lighthouse of sorts for people to, whether they choose the path that the Center for Human Awakening is offering is not particularly relevant or even important to Richard or I. Mm-hmm. But if this, what the Center for Human Awakening invites and offers, serves as a beacon for people to seek out other paths, other ways, that in and of itself fulfills our mandate. That in and of itself fulfills our core activities. But the interest that's been shown just since January 1 has been very heartwarming and very encouraging. And my two words that begin with P that, you know, I've shared with Richard from day one and I keep repeating to him is persistence and patience. Mm. The yeah. seeds will germinate with persistence and with patience.
And again, I love the fact that you have injected into the program a wonderful sound effect that really exemplifies the raising of the consciousness as that plane flies by. Reverend Robert, I thank you so much for joining us on the program. Robert Meagher is our guest here on the program. He is co-founder of the Center for Human Awakening. The web address is centerforhumanawakening.com, centerforhumanawakening.com, the psycho-spiritual teachings of Richard Harvey. And I want to tell you, though, I thank you for clarifying from the standpoint of Richard. And I would take it that you know him well enough that you are able to speak in this vein, that following the center is not as important as waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you for that, because a lot of folks, they get really concerned about people getting involved in all of these different groups and organizations and philosophies that are, you know, they don't exactly have your best interest at heart. And I have to say that I have been involved. Fortunately, the universe has steered me in the right direction where I've never gotten involved in groups like that. We're exclusive. We're the only, and that's one of the things that always struck me so funny about Christianity during that 15-year period where they kept saying this is the only way. And I'm going, well, I can, there are millions of different foods and millions of different drinks and millions of different educational directions I can go and careers I can follow and people I could associate with and or have relationships and or marry and so forth and so on. And every element of society, I've got all these different choices. But when it comes to spirituality, there's only one. It's not consistent in my mind. It's not logical. But, hey, you know, they're not talking logic. But I thank you for talking to us about the Center for Human Awakening. And if people want to get in touch with you, can they use that email address I've got right here, which is Meagher, M-E-A-G-H-E-R, I believe it's servicingyourjourney.com.
If they wanted to get in touch with me, Richard, personally through my ministry, it would be R. Meagher, R-M-E-A-G-H-E-R, at servingyourjourney.com. If they wanted to reach out to the Center for Human Awakening, it's very simply info@centerforhumanawakening.com. And center, by the way, is spelled C-E-N-T-E-R.
E-R, not R-E.
Correct.
Which is still correct, believe it or not. It just depends upon what side of the Atlantic you're on.
That's right.
Yeah, I've been learning some interesting grammar lessons of my own over the years where, okay, what I was taught in English class, that was correct. And this person is telling me something that is also correct. Seems contradictory, but it's not. And that's one of the other aspects, I think, too, that if we open ourselves up to these different experiences of learning from one another, we're going to learn some things we didn't know that aren't necessarily contradictory too. They could be wonderful augmentations. That's not quite the word, but an embellishment isn't even the right word. But, you know, it really enhancements. There you go. To where you are. And Robert Meagher, thank you again for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.